everyone. It's Smitty, and I'm here with my friend, co-host, and fellow integrative nutrition health coach, Tammy Ressler. Hey, Tammy.
Hello there. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Yes, good morning, good afternoon, depending upon where we are. I am super, super excited today to have author Beth Kempton at the table as our guest. Beth has written a lovely book on Christmas. It's called Calm Christmas, and I love the little subtitle. It says, A Little Book of Festive Joy. The book is full of thoughts, suggestions, activities for shifting the chaos into calm so that we might actually enjoy the upcoming holidays. And the UK version of Calm Christmas dropped last year, and I will admit that I actually purchased the copy a year ago, and I sat down and I was gonna diligently have a calm Christmas that year, and I read a few pages, and then in the chaos of Christmas, I actually put the book back on the shelf, and it has sat there for nearly a year. I picked this little gem up again this summer. I'm so, so excited that she's here today. It's truly a pinch me moment. So here we go. Enjoy today's episode. Hello, Beth.
Hello.
Coming all the way from England. And we get to hear this wonderful accent.
Hello, so, hello. What a treat it is to be with you both today. Thank you for having me.
We are so excited. It's 8:30 in the morning here, and in a nod to you, in England, I have my mug of English breakfast tea.
And funnily enough, so do I, whatever time of day it is.
And I also have a scone or a scone. And so that's how we're going to kick off the conversation. I want to know how you pronounce whether it is a scone, as most people in America say, but I have heard both variations of that, whether it's a scone or scone, from people in England. So how do you say it?
I say scone, and I put the jam on first and then the cream. Some people put cream on first and then the jam, but I don't know how you spread the jam when you do that. So it's this funny thing.
That is right. That is absolutely right. And do you always use clotted cream?
Clotted cream is very famous in the part of the world that I live in the Southwest.
Yeah,
but it's not very good for your heart, in terms of your actual organ, your heart. So don't eat it very often. It's quite good for the idea of the heart. It makes you happy because it's very delicious. But and clotted cream ice cream is to die for. It's amazing. But
we might have to try that.
Take the podcast on the road and come over here and try it.
Road trip. Yes, when we can all travel safely again. So that really leads us into my first question, that we're in the middle of this global pandemic, and some of us are already experiencing these real high levels of stress. Do you think COVID really changed how we approach a calm Christmas this year? And if so, why?
I think COVID has changed how we approach everything. Actually, nearly, there's almost no area of our life that is untouched by it. I think a positive way to look at it is that so much of what we previously took for granted or thought we could rely on just got pushed aside or broken or taken away from us or in some way thrown into a different form, that the unexpected happening kind of became the norm and that everything felt unknown in some ways, whereas Christmas is Christmas. Comes every year. It's still going to come. 25th of December, it's going to be Christmas Day. And it feels like actually something which has been there for centuries and through, you know, family lineages and is part of a really important marker in the year for so many people. And that is coming again. And we can trust in that. And how we approach it, I think, is completely a decision for us. Like, we know it's not going to be the same in some ways. We know a family of 25 in many parts of the world will not be able to get together. But that doesn't mean we can't honour the people that we love and treasure and connect with them and find ways to make them feel like we're thinking of them, even if we can't physically be there together, there will definitely also be some upsides. I know many people who year in, year out, drive across the country or get on a plane from the obligation to go and visit their family. And actually all they want to do is stay at home with their toddlers and enjoy a tiny family Christmas. This is the perfect excuse for that. It's nothing to do with me. It's too dangerous to travel. And then once you've done it once, it's a lot easier to negotiate that again. So I think there will be opportunities, as there always are, with the difficult times as well.
I absolutely love the book. There were so many things in here that were so valuable for me, but I'm like, you've written about Japanese culture and you've written about people chasing their dreams and all of that. So how in the world did you land on Christmas and a calm Christmas? Because that seems like such an oxymoron, really.
Hence the book.
And the book was so surprising, like, oh, there was so much depth to it, not just about, oh, let me tell you the five practical ways to have a calm Christmas.
Exactly.
It was like there's some intrinsic work and thought and belief and depth to this little precious book.
It is deep. Why, Beth? How'd that happen?
What a brilliant question. And I'm currently working on my fifth book, which is yet again about Japanese culture. And it's a follow-up from Wabi Sabi. And I think long-term in my career as a writer, that's my specialist area. Absolutely. It's Japanese culture. I've got 2 degrees in Japanese, and the idea of bringing together very old philosophy, which is tucked behind the door of language and very inaccessible in some ways, and kind of bring that to fore and look at life now and say, how can we use that to help us? That's absolutely my passion in one way from a writing point of view, because there's so much to dig into. And I mean, there's so much poetry and literature and all these things. So from a kind of scholarly point of view, it's so interesting to me. Those are long projects. The first book was basically 20 years in the making. The next one is coming out next year. It's another 3 years. And it's still some of the stuff that I've been looking at for years before that. So those are like the big projects. I wrote a book in lockdown called We're In This Together, Finding Hope and Opportunity in the Depths of Adversity, about the pandemic. I wrote that book in 16 days. And it was crazy. But that was taking what we've learned and taught in the last 10 years of my company, Do What You Love, helping people to do what I talked about in the first book, Freedom Seeker, Finding Freedom. And the subtitle of that book is Live More, Worry Less, Do What You Love. So how can you approach something so crazy and difficult to get your head around as a global pandemic, see it as an opportunity, find reasons for hope, and think, okay, what if this is happening for me, not to me? And this is a moment to change my trajectory. What might that mean? And knowing that this juggernaut was just coming, because I'd been watching it since January, because I was supposed to spend February in Japan with my family researching my next book. So we'd been looking at what was going on in China and Japan in January, going, is it safe to take our children? And in the end, we cancelled 2 hours before the taxi picked us up to take us to the airport.
Oh my gosh.
So we'd been watching it very closely. I think by the time everyone else realised this was serious, we'd been preparing for 6 weeks, seeing this thing coming. It was an opportunity to say, here's a bunch of stuff that we know that we can see is going to be applicable in the coming months, because essentially what it is how to navigate change. And every single person in the world is in some way going to be impacted by change in their life. Yeah. And so that's where that one came from. So that and Freedom Seeker are quite well connected. And actually beneath Wabi Sabi, the subtitle of which is Japanese Wisdom for a Perfectly Imperfect Life, is all about living well. And part of that is navigating life, knowing that when you try hard, things go wrong. And it's difficult. How do you do that? But they are really connected, even though the themes seem different. And Calm Christmas is a little bit different. But from, you know, my company, Do What You Love, it's all about, like, fill your life with things you love to do, whether that's work or otherwise. And if people say, oh, you can't make money out of everything that you love. And I'm like, wait, what do I love? I love Japan. I love feeling free, going on adventures. And I love Christmas. There we are. All right, book of age. You know, and then when you think about it, you know, my eldest daughter was born on Christmas Day. I was obsessed with Christmas since I was a child. But then in recent years, with a toddler and a baby, it seemed to somehow be tarnished by other people's expectation. My eldest daughter was born on the first Christmas since I got married. It was the first Christmas that me and my husband ever spent together, because until then we both spent our Christmases with our parents. So all these things kind of landed on Christmas Day, and we were suddenly like, this is unbelievably stressful, and all these presents are so wasteful, and what's going on? We're people who love Christmas. What about the people who hate Christmas? We, over the years, tried our own ways of getting back to Christmas being really lovely time of year, and also thinking, what kind of Christmas do we want our children to remember? Because that's up to us to create. And we're very much love spending that time between Christmas and New Year to reflect on the year and plan ahead. And that's become an annual ritual for us. So all those things kind of converge, nothing to do with writing a book, but that's just what we were doing every year, like kind of fixing our own things that didn't work. And that led towards the book, but it was just one day, it suddenly came to me. I think this is a really big deal. There's 2 billion people in the world who celebrate Christmas. There is huge amounts of money that people can't afford that is spent at Christmas. Unbelievable amounts of waste. From an environmental point of view, it's awful. And then the mental health statistics around depression, from loneliness, from feeling that people aren't good enough because they can't afford all the presents everyone says they have to buy, all these things. And then also people not knowing how to deal with Christmas when they've had a really difficult year, they've lost somebody, or there's just so many layers to it. So when you dive into it, at one point I was like, this is really frivolous, writing a book about Christmas. But then when you actually dig into data around mental health and debt and all these things, it's huge, isn't it? And some families never argue except at Christmas. And then if you only get together at Christmas and that's the only time you argue, then every time you meet your family, you'll argue. I mean, what's that all about? So I really wanted to find ways to help. And what was really interesting is that we talk about Christmas as if it's a thing that we all see in the same way, but every single experience of Christmas is different. And so I kind of got halfway through it and I was like, what have I taken on? Like, this is such a responsibility. And I don't know what everyone else's experience of Christmas is. So that was a real challenge. But then when I reached out to my community, and I spoke to hundreds of people in the research from like 30 something countries and all sorts of different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. It was really important. This is not a book for Christian people. Like, this is anybody who celebrates Christmas, however they do. And it doesn't matter your background or what country you're from or anything like that. And also there's so many blended families these days, like how all of that, I wanted to capture all of that. And what was so interesting is I was looking for one symbol of Christmas that we all kind of connect to, thinking, oh, it'll be the Christmas tree, or it probably won't be turkey, because I know that not everyone eats turkey, but it'll be something like that, or it'll be Christmas carols or something. And there wasn't one. That's how different the Christmases are. There were these themes that everybody seemed to connect, relate to one or more of these five kind of what I call stories of Christmas. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I realized that, it all made sense, because that's the way that we figure out how to do Christmas with people who come at it different ways, and how to respect and support other people's view of Christmas while also honoring our own. And then suddenly it felt like, you know what, if each of us could reach out to one person and do one thing to take away the stress and all of that, when you multiply that by, I'm not saying 2 billion people will read the book, that'd be nice, but everybody.
Well, dream
big. But if you've read it and you do something and then you talk to a friend about it, you know, you talk to 3 people, that's 4 people influencing maybe 10 people in their family. Already you've taken away probably a few thousand dollars of money you didn't need to spend, and a load of anxiety, and creating beautiful new memories, you know, just from you guys. So I think there's actually a huge opportunity to shift the impact Christmas can have and turn it from something that is far away in the distance and we kind of count down, but we're also like, oh my God, so much to do, all of that, into something which is a beacon in the darkness of winter and is an opportunity to pause and reflect before that shift to the new year.
So Beth, share the 5 stories, because that part honestly hooked me. I was so fascinated by that. There are a couple of graphs in the book, but I think there's something on your site too that people can go and download.
It's absolutely fascinating. When I've done this in a kind of workshop with people in a circle doing this exercise, you can see people turning to each other and going, oh, now I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so me. I was like, oh, now I know why that kid does that and that one does that. And this female, it was like,
oh. It's so simple, but really helps, doesn't it? So,
yeah.
So the five stories of Christmas are faith, magic, connection, abundance, and heritage. And if I talk very briefly about each of them, so faith is really the religious side of Christmas. Not necessarily, you don't have to be religious to know about it or appreciate it, but it's the story of the birth of Christ. So that's one big story associated with Christmas and everything that comes with that, from Christmas caroling to, you know, school plays that you hold in a church, or anything to do with the faith story at Christmas, as well as the actual story. And what that means to you, if it means anything to you at Christmas. Mm-hmm. That's the first one. I would dive a little bit into the history of that. And it's so fascinating that a lot of the facts don't line up. And yet that that story has just lasted for centuries, literally.
Centuries.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the story of magic is, of course, the story of Father Christmas or Santa Claus or whatever you choose to call him. And it's the story that I grew up with, as did many most children that I know certainly have some connection to that story of Christmas. And it's as much about the story itself as about the idea of the possibility of magic and wonder. There's something about the Christmas holiday period. It's funny, I think if you can get rid of the noise almost, it's just like the twinkling lights and the you know, the stars and is he coming? It's like Christmas Eve, that whole thing. There's something really magical about it. So there's that story. And then the story of connection, which is, I think, typified by A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And he wasn't really writing about what happened at the time. It's almost like it was the beginnings of that kind of Victorian Christmas. And then his book was so successful, it became a catalyst for how people celebrated. And many of the traditions that we hold dear today actually came from that time. So they're not 2,000 years old, you know. They've been around for a lot less time than that. But if you look at them, of course, Christmas Carol is a story about, if you don't know this story, definitely try and watch it or read it this year. It's it's wonderful. But it's a story of a miserly old man who gets visited in the night by, first of all, his old business partner who's passed away, and then three ghosts, ghosts of Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future. And it's really thinking about your life and your legacy. You might think it's about money and presents and stuff, but it's really about connection. With much of the Victorian Christmas celebrations, it's about people coming together. Symbols like the Christmas tree will gather around, sing around, share presents around, sitting around a table. And a lot of those traditions, like sending Christmas cards, that started around the same time. So really human connection is a really important symbol for many people at Christmas. Some people are not interested in getting together with other people, and they just literally want to do nothing but stay at home on their own and eat pizza. Like, I know that for sure because people have told me. So that's a story that it resonates with a lot of people, but not everybody. The fourth one is abundance, which is very much the big shouty Santa Claus on the streets of New York and all the shopping mall music and all the big like presents, showing your love with presents and all this stuff. And for some people, that's a huge part of Christmas. And for some people, that's the worst part of Christmas. You know, that's it. Again, that's just a story of Christmas. And then heritage, which is connected to things that only your family connects to Christmas, because that's come down through the generations, or it's something to do with a particular merging of backgrounds in your lineage, or it's the place that you live and how the climate has affected how you celebrate, and that kind of very personal side of things. In terms of the exercise, if you want to try it, you just need to take a piece of paper and draw a vertical axis and a horizontal axis, and up the vertical axis go from 0 to 10. Just write 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then on the horizontal axis, if you just write those five stories, faith, magic, connection, abundance, and heritage, and mark each story from 0 to 10 as to how important that is to you at Christmas. And you might go, well, they're all important, because as you were saying each one, I was like, yeah. But actually, if you really think about it and you don't let yourself score the same for each one, which ones really matter to you? So if you draw them and put dots on, and I like to draw stars and join them up, makes a pretty thing that looks like a constellation, which is why I call this exercise the Christmas constellation. And then you look at that and you're like, oh, that's interesting. That shows me that, you know, magic is the most important thing for me this Christmas, and these two don't matter so much, and et cetera, et cetera. What's really interesting is when you then ask the people that you live with what matters to them. And then you map their constellation over your constellation, and they probably don't look the same. And then you realize both the sources of tension and the potential sources of joy. And just because something's a source of tension also doesn't mean you have to not do it. It could be that you're like, oh, you kept inviting me to that Christmas carol service. And I hate Christmas carol services, but now I understand that that's the most important thing to you at Christmas. So I'm either going to take you, book you a special ticket, or I'm going to suggest that I have the kids tonight and we'll go and do some amazing adventure, and you and your three friends go on me and have a wonderful time at the carol service. And you see Christmas from the other person's point of view. And it's an amazing, really simple tool that you can use every year because things shift. So actually, if lockdown and the whole experience of the pandemic has made you realize that family and connection to human beings is so important to you, then maybe your story shifted since last year and your constellation was slightly different. The most important thing to do is to make sure you do something with that information, because it's a fun exercise. But actually, if you then go and do Christmas exactly the same, you'll be in the middle of the annual row going, oh yeah, there was that diagram, wasn't there? Tell me this is going to happen.
Generally, both Thanksgiving and Christmas, our home has been the place where people gather. And prepping food for the before the event and then the day of the event and for 2 days after the event, cleaning and all of that stuff. And that's not going to happen this year. The thing that we've decided we are going to do this year in lieu of having everyone here is that we are actually going to make little baby frittatas that you would put in greased papers. And so we are making those for every member of the family. And we are mailing those out overnight with a Christmas card and a photo of all of us together last year, so that Christmas morning, they will have at least a piece of our home.
How beautiful is that? And that would never have happened without this. And it reminds me of someone, when I was researching the book, I found these amazing stories of household, like women who ran households in Ireland like 100 years ago. And they used to send turkeys on the train from London to Tipperary. And it's amazing. Oh, it's like going back in time almost to reaching people through the old snail mail process. And it's absolutely beautiful. And I was just talking to someone earlier today about the idea of, if somebody's on their own at Christmas and is in isolation for, you know, continued health reasons, right, and really can't go anywhere, and that's a really difficult situation for them, you could make an advent calendar with 25 messages for them. So every single day they're getting a love message from you throughout December, and know that they're being thought about. And really simple things like that that can really help. And I think sometimes we do have to make sacrifices at Christmas, but for the sake of somebody else. If, you know, especially if it's maybe coming up to somebody's, one of their final Christmases, then we have, in the period of our life, we have many Christmases, hopefully, in a long life. So maybe we give this one to that person and we do everything that they want to make it a special Christmas, because they won't be with us for many more. That's a very different thing to having to do it because somebody else is demanding it. But then another year, you can make it all about your family. So I think thinking about Christmas, not, we seem to attack it as a one-time thing every year, when actually thinking about it in the context of a few years, go, well, this Christmas is going to be for this, and next Christmas is going to be for this. And I love to think about the idea of not trying to aim for the perfect Christmas, but aim for some other adjective kind of Christmas that you decide, you know.
Love that.
Yeah.
Cozy Christmas.
It's great. Whatever.
We don't know if this is our last Christmas, or anybody who we love's last Christmas. We don't. So imagine taking that approach to this Christmas just because, and then next Christmas just because, and then actually what's under the tree doesn't matter so much, or that thing doesn't matter so much. And I think so much of what a lot of people have learned this year in the pandemic is what really matters and what we thought mattered but actually doesn't. And applying that to Christmas and go, those things that back in June we were like, wow, I really don't care about buying a new outfit, you know, but I really, really want to see my mom, you know.
Exactly.
Yes.
I laughed out loud at one of the stories in your book that you shared, and it was your first Christmas, I believe. You talked about this earlier, about your newborn. You have a newborn, a toddler, Mr. K at the helm in the kitchen, and you were trying to juggle all of that and keep all of your other guests entertained. And after the guests have left and there's some kind of semblance of quiet and you two are sitting on the sofa and you are having leftovers, suddenly you discover what?
So we've had this whole day. I don't know what my husband was doing in the kitchen for 10 hours, but he was literally in the kitchen for 10 hours from breakfast through till at the end of everyone going home. It was one of those, we're doing everything and trying to be there with our children, opening their presents and all that stuff, and exhausting. And then everybody leaves, sat down, like you said, just like, oh. And my husband just turned to me and went, I don't even like turkey. And I was like, neither do I.
And that's the thing that your whole meal is built around.
Yeah,
and
every year for the last 42 years or whatever it was, you know. Right. Just like, so nobody's ever mentioned, like nobody's ever asked, do you like what you have to have for Christmas? And the fact it was both of us, and we've been doing this every, you know, it was only like our third Christmas or something since we got married, but we'd never had that conversation. And it was, the turkey takes forever to cook. So that's half the reason he'd been in the kitchen all day. And it's like, neither of us even like it, what we're doing. And it was such a kind of, you know, forehead slapping moment. Like, and so much I think about Christmas is we don't talk about it when it's not Christmas. And so we don't see those tiny details that can make a massive difference, you know. That's fine.
And so what changes then have you made from that moment, like the realization that neither one of you like turkey? And so now what does it look like now that you've had that huge discovery? Because it's been how many years?
It's been this since will be that the moment? Fourth year.
Okay, yeah. 4 years. So in 4 years, has it evolved?
Any turkey?
There is no turkey. Any turkey? The threshold of our home in 4 years. So what we do, there was a combination of that, the main realization is that, and also part of the reason I think we felt so, I don't know, just like at the end of the day, was that we hadn't been outside and we'd been a whole family inside all day long, you know, the heating on, the wood burners on, just it's getting hot in there, these two little children running around and all this. We literally didn't open the door or walk, you know, we lived near a park, we didn't walk to the park and do anything because we had this schedule of all the stuff we had to do. And, you know, it just made no sense at all. We love being outdoors. So we're like, okay, let's not cook turkey and let's go for a walk on Christmas morning. And actually, how do we go for a really long walk on Christmas morning? We have to not make something that requires, I don't like leaving the house with the oven on, right? So we have to do something that doesn't take 4 hours to cook it. And so we decided to make a flavors of Christmas, but not turkey, chicken pie. And now on Christmas Eve, I have a really nice time cooking up the inside of the pie, and it takes ages to bubble away on the stove while we're, you know, listening to carols on the radio and having a drink and all that. It's no effort at all. And then that goes in the fridge overnight and it tastes better the next day anyway. And then we go on our really long walk, come back, put the pastry on top, bang it in the oven, an hour later there's Christmas dinner and it tastes so much better than turkey.
I love it.
Love it
so much. And I love it. It's awesome.
Well, the other thing is we were like, so if we decide, it's almost like, felt like naughty school children going, okay, we don't want to eat turkey, but we can't not eat turkey. And then we're like, who is going to tell you? Like, nobody's looking, nobody cares. No one's going to come on Christmas Day and go, what are you doing? You can't do that. And I think so much that, like, you can just give yourself permission to do whatever you want. It's Christmas, you know? Yeah.
Calm Christmas is written with really important questions. You talked about it a little bit earlier, the five stories, to help us identify why we hold on to the traditions that we do. But you also give suggestions, different solutions, alternative solutions to celebrate differently. And you have a whole website, doyouloveforlife.com.
Yep.
You know, I've spent some time on that site, and man, there's so much there. Can you talk a little bit
about,
oh, it's great resources. Can you talk a little bit about that? And was that birthed out of something, a need for yourself or research that you discovered? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, Do What You Love is the name of my company that has, we've had the company for a decade nearly. Mm-hmm. And doyouloveforlife.com is the website of our company. And mostly what we do is deliver online courses that help people navigate change, figure out how to live well and how to use their creativity to build a creative career, those kinds of things. And the other businesses you talked about at the beginning of the podcast are kind of spin-offs from that. They're founded with other specialists in the creative industries to help people specifically take their creativity and thrive as artists and as designers. But Do What You Love itself is more generalist, but also more holistic in terms of looking at your whole life and discovering how to kind of reconfigure it so that all the pieces add up to a life lived well, and how to first of all figure out what needs to change, and then how to plan for that change, and how to bring people along with you, which is often a lot of the challenge when you need to make a change. And we have specific courses from Do What You Love, which is exactly that, helping people to mostly navigate a career change. But we've had all sorts of results from that course, from people going to live on the other side of the world to people proposing to their husband, and people getting divorced, even like realizing that their marriage was a big part of their life that wasn't working, which is, you know, if that's what you decide, that's a really important step for you, through to people setting up their own businesses or making a career shift or deciding that they want to have two or three different things going on in their life, one that really supports them financially, another one which is much more supportive of their creativity, for example, and figuring out the balance of that, all sorts of things like that. Have a course called How to Be Happy, Calm, Focused and Organized, which is all about really bringing calm to your life and getting on top of the huge amounts of stuff that descends on us, and very, very practical tools on bringing big project to life in the midst of the chaos of everything else. Really great ways of managing to-do lists and things like that, and things like how to write a book proposal. I've got a masterclass on there on how to write a book proposal, another one on how to take what you know and are expert in and teach it online. And this is, I mean, we created that course about 5 years ago. It's obviously updated often, but we've been doing online courses for 10 years. Back in the day, you had to tell people what an online course was, and now the whole world's online, right? But it's an amazing opportunity for people. And we had to educate people about how to use those tools, whereas now it's second nature to everybody, or at least people who are afraid of it are embracing it as a way to learn. And you can teach anything online, as we've all discovered through the pandemic. Things that we thought were impossible to do online have been brought to life in amazing ways. And if you want to do what you love in a flexible way, it's an absolutely fantastic way to generate money. So really specific courses like that as well, that's all on there. And then lots of free inspiration through our blog and all of that. There's a whole special free Christmas care package that comes with the book. So when you buy the book, there's a URL in there, which takes you to a section of our website where there's a whole host of resources, from tips on how to have a good night's sleep through to how to be a mindful guest, loads of mindful gift ideas, alternative advent calendar ideas, how to deal with loneliness at Christmas, how to make a wreath, all sorts of things in there. And for this year, to celebrate the launch of the American version, we've put together a brand new, perfectly imperfect 2021 planner with an audio book and digital planning tool. So knowing that our plans are out the window, it's the kind of anti-planner for people who love to plan. So like embracing the fact that it might not happen, but that there is kind of a motivation and inspiration that comes with the process of planning, and the really important thing of pausing and reflecting on this crazy year that we have had, pulling out the goodness and figuring out, well, even if I don't know what's coming next year, what do I want to proactively move towards? So that's going to be completely free for anybody who buys Calm Christmas this year. That'll be out soon.
And I will say that I've not seen the new content, but there's a lot of really good, fun, thoughtful stuff that's on there. So it's great content. Loved it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
If I could just say, if anyone wants to get access to the free planner, if they're with Calm Christmas this year, any version, the US version, absolutely. But also if you buy the international version, if they go to bethkempton.com, all the information will be up on there very soon. And you just have to fill in a quick form with your receipt number, and then you'll get access to the planner. So you, even though the book doesn't come out till late October, you'll be able to download that planner right away and start reflecting on the year and planning ahead for 2021.
That is awesome. So get your books, people. Get your books. That's what I'm saying.
BethKempton.com.
And also come over to me on Instagram at Beth Kempton and tell me what your constellation looks like. I'd love to know how that goes for you.
I'm somebody who, when I read books, I don't underline or highlight because more often than not, I will pass them along. And so I do all my little post-it notes and your little 5x7 book has got, oh, probably 20 or 30 little post-it notes in here. So I really don't underline, but on page 207, I underlined a single word, revolution. Mm. And I went back and reread that word 3 or 4 times, that sentence. And you say, this year I'm proposing a New Year's revolution. You were talking about resolutions, which I have abhorred for decades because it was always around getting fit and weighing less, becoming smaller, the size number in your, you know, in your clothing. This push to be perfect somehow. And so when I read your word revolution, I like stopped and was, and I shouted, I remember shouting, yes. And my husband was like, what's yes? And I read it to him. I read that, you know, it's this revolution. And I wonder if that was an intentional use of the word, or as a writer, did that word just sort of show up on the page and you were surprised by it?
No, I actually had a downloadable free resource on my website called New Year's Revolution from about 8 years ago. I've always felt exactly the same about resolutions. I think it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense from the point of us as animals who are essentially hibernating in the middle of winter, suddenly jump up on January the 1st and go, I'm going to achieve X, Y, Z. Like, we're supposed to be resting and building ourselves up for the year ahead. And if you're going to do those big goals, spring's a much more sensible time from a kind of evolutionary point of view to try and embark on those things. Also, I think what I've come to learn over the years is that goals are fine, but what actually happens when you really dedicate yourself to a path, what often is surprising along the way is the goals that you set for yourself have helped you move along that path, but they become obsolete. You realize there's something more important beyond or in a slightly different trajectory. And if you're holding onto that goal too tight, it's very difficult to let it go because that feels like a failure, even when you're completely succeeding in your own path because you've realized something else is important and that you need to let those things go to be able to move on. And so I think there's a value in giving yourself things to aim for. But actually, the big changes that we make, it's a lot more kind of nuanced than picking a random, often completely random goal at New Year, just because it's January the 1st. It makes no sense. But also not thinking about things in the wider context than just 1 year. You know, if you want to make a massive shift in your life, even if you happen to realize that between Christmas and New Year, because that's the first time you've stopped since last January, I think that often happens. People get to the end of the year, you're like, you know what, I don't want to do that again. Let me think about this. Something needs to change. Then that bit makes sense that we have some clarity then. But if you want to make a big change, it nearly always takes way longer than 12 months, unless it's come about by something dramatic happening, like you were made redundant out of the blue, so now you need to do something else. So there's those kind of things. But if it's just from yourself, and you want to retrain to another career, can't just do it the next day. You know, there's all sorts of things, so many layers, conversations you have, money you have to save, learning you have to do, the whole self-confidence, being a beginner again and figuring out how you're going to do this, that all takes time. And small goals along the way help you with that, but having just a much bigger idea of the concept of making a change is much healthier, and it leaves opportunity for things to happen in a way that you don't even know about yet.
Right.
If you're that specific about a goal, you were looking only over here and all this good stuff is over here going, come on this way. Miss it, don't you? You absolutely do. So I think in that time of winter, It's a great time for dreaming and scheming and to be thinking about things in a kind of floaty, fluid way. Dreaming about a life where, fill in the blank, you know, and then allowing the universe to help you figure out how to be living that kind of life. And there are so many ways to that kind of life. And you also might realize there are parts of your life that are already like that. It's just you don't give them any attention or you don't give enough time to that thing. And so having that kind of floaty fluid way of looking at it, I think is so much healthier at that time of year.
I just want to know if there's anything else that you would like to share with us before we end here.
Well, I'm incredibly grateful that we got to share this page, this conversation today. You know, I think there's been a lot of rallying against COVID, completely understandably, not saying the word, feeling like it's ruining everything. It's the enemy. So much anger in a lot of the words that we have used. But I'd love to come back to these are the days of our lives, my friend. We are living through history. This is happening.
Yep.
And we get to write what goes on the page.
Yep.
You know, I love how you just kind of wrap that up. And I think we said it in one of the other podcasts that we just had recorded that these are the days of our lives and to be present because we do get choices and we get to write metaphorically or for real. What that looks like.
Yeah.
And so just reframing opportunity, hope, and we get to do this. So thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure and a blessing just to be here.
Yeah.
and hear your teachings and learnings and stories. You're a delight.
Thank you so much for being such a generous host.
So just a few rapid fire questions. Christmas tree, Beth. Real or fake?
Real.
Christmas lights, clear, white, or colored?
Oh, clear white. And in the trees and hung everywhere.
Yes. Themed tree with a specific color or whatever gets hung kind of tree?
A combination. Whatever gets hung around the back. My children want to put the, and everything looking nice on the front. But I want to put there.
Yes. And then do you rearrange their little, their ads? Like after they go to bed, do you move stuff around or do you just leave it?
I've been known to do that on occasion.
Spoken like a true mom. Most meaningful ornament?
That would be the angel at the top of the Christmas tree when I was a child that had a ping pong ball for a head. And my dad called it Arthur Scargill, who was a big part of the mining industry, the leader of the trade union back in the decade that I was born, and I never really understood why our angel was called Arthur, but he meant enough to us, and we put him on the top. I got lifted up to put him on the top of the tree every year, so it's very meaningful.
Oh, I love it. Awesome. Tree comes down when?
As late as possible, but always before Twelfth Night.
Okay, and Twelfth Night is, remind me again, I have read that, so Twelfth Night is sometime in January?
Yeah, 12 days after Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, but I often take down the bright decorations before that and leave the evergreens and the fairy lights.
I love it. And so then the perfect Kempton style calm Christmas.
A Christmas day, all the excitement of children waking up to the magic of Christmas and great food, not complicated, just really good food. Long walks, lots of time for a lingering conversation. The last few years we've actually gone to the beach. It's very wintry and cold. It's not a kind of sunshiny beach.
Right.
But the children to, you know, play with their new scooters or whatever, and us just to have our coffee by the waves and say Merry Christmas to whoever else is out walking, and then to come back to a cozy house and maybe watch a Christmas movie and just be together and enjoy that.
I love it.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you have a calm Christmas and a happy new year.
And with that,
thank you so much, both of you.
All right. Thank you, Beth.
You too. Take care.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.